Oh, the dulcet tones of crisscross applesauce. Welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you, coast to coast, around the world on AFN. Tuesday, first hour. We are always doing a little SailSportTalk.com. Get out there on the smooth waters, the choppy waves, whatever it is, with our co-hosts, Karen Lyle and our friend Christopher Kane. And we're about to do a little interview. First, I'll say my hellos. Karen, how are you today?
I'm doing fantastic. I did get out there on the water, and there was almost no wind. It was very smooth waters.
Very cool. Christopher Kane is in our studios right now. Christopher, I hope you're masked up in that bouillabaisse of germ studio.
You know, this is where the magic happens, Rick, so we're going to wade in.
All right. Well, they did, these two people here, Karen and Christopher, they did an interview with Trevor Davidson. He's part of the short team in production for the America's Cup New York Yacht Club American Magic Team. And let's play that interview right now.
This is Karen Lyle and Christopher Kane of SailSport Talk. And we are interviewing today Trevor Davidson of the American Magic Team in New Zealand. Trevor, welcome to our show. We're so happy to have you talk to us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about your role as a production team member with the American Magic Team.
Well, in Bristol, I was kind of a general jack-of-all-trades kind of hand. I would sort of help out every department as needed. I did a lot of material acquisitions as well, so was involved heavily in kind of the purchasing side and dealing with suppliers, while also kind of working with the boat builders to make sure they had everything they needed to do their job. Yeah, I was sort of one of the younger guys there, so it was good to just get involved and really do anything I could to carve out a spot on the team.
Now, I've always been fascinated with moving an America's Cup team. People don't realize there's no base already there. There's no, you know, stadium, if you will, already there. Just walk us through what it takes to move an America's Cup syndicate halfway across the world.
Well, I can only speak to the stuff that I moved, and I can tell you packing up our production location in Bristol was it was a bit of a nightmare. It took a long time, but at the end of the day, it was pretty good, and I actually ended up flying here with the racing yacht on the Antonov cargo plane. So I quite literally got to see it all the way through from when it left the production shed to getting on the tarmac in Auckland. So I flew with the boat all the way here, and that was a pretty cool experience for sure.
And I'd love to hear sort of what you didn't expect when you got to New Zealand. What was the first of, I'm sure, many uh-oh moments?
Yeah, I mean, well, as soon as we got here, we had to do our mandatory 2-week quarantine in a hotel. So basically, I arrived on the cargo plane and was immediately taken off. I cleared through customs and then walked right across the street to the airport hotel. So I was here for a full 2 weeks in a hotel room before I was allowed to get out and do anything.
That must have been very interesting. So I know that when they were in San Francisco, I spent a lot of time with Oracle's boat spies. You were out on the water checking the other boats out. And there was always this balance between what we're seeing in our numbers versus what we're seeing from other teams and how that influences design change. So I'd love to hear a little bit about, you know, how you are doing data acquisition and competitive, you know, analysis now that almost all the syndicates have their Gen 2 boats on the water.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can't speak too much to the data analysis side of things. I mean, we've got a rotation of guys that are pretty much if another boat's going out or if just recently if their second boats have rolled out of the shed, we've generally always got at least one set of eyes on them with a camera lens. I know we do take some of that stuff into account, what we see, but I can't really speak to where we go with it or what we do with it, but it is a factor for sure.
How is the boat dissembled so that it can travel on a plane?
Well, it was on its cradle. It's low cradle, shrink-wrapped, and basically it was a Russian or a Ukrainian, excuse me, Antonov AN-120-150. So it was a big Ukrainian cargo plane. And basically, we got to the airport super early in the morning and just pushed the boat up the ramp, and the flight crew did the rest, locked it all in, and I settled in for a four-day trip to New Zealand.
Yeah, all the syndicates use the same plane, so that poor thing has been going back and forth, picking up boats around the world.
Yes, well, it's lifted a lot heavier things than our boats, luckily. Our boats are pretty light.
Are you working directly with the designers? Are you working with the sailors? You are helping procure things for them, but who gives you the instructions?
I kind of work directly for the production leaders. So Tim Hackett is kind of my direct superior, and I've worked really closely with him for the past 3 years. 2.5 years, I guess, and it's been really good. He's been good. I've been able to learn a lot from him, and yeah. So it's basically I work directly for Tim, but then anybody else who requires it, I can do whatever they need as well. But he would be my direct superior, and he's been awesome.
So I know that this year the new AC-75s, it's a box roll. So some of the parts of the boat are standardized, and some are not. How do you work through that, you know, on a daily production basis to make sure that you're keeping the boat, you know, correct for the rule, but also gaining your own advantage?
Well, I know all the designers have read the rule extremely thoroughly, and you're always gonna do your best to push it to the very limit and make gains anywhere you can. I can't really speak to any specifics, obviously, of what we've done, but everybody, as you say, is doing their due diligence to the rule and reading it to the letter. So those parts that we do have flexibility with are being taken advantage of. Yeah, but like you said, there's a lot of provided parts. The foil arms and the cant system and some other things are all provided, so we can't do much there. But what we can do, we are doing.
What does your team do to promote teamwork and everybody working together? Because there's so many moving parts to this whole operation. How does your day kind of feed into that teamwork?
Oh, well, as with any group activity, I mean, you have to work through your areas, and if you don't work through your areas in a timely and effective manner, then it's going to slow somebody else down. So it's basically just a big circle of accountability. You know, everybody knows what we're trying to do, and you have to do your job so everybody else can do their job, and everybody kind of knows that and buys into it. So I mean, there's some long days and some hard hours, but we're all in it together, so you do it for each other.
How is the boat assembled when it gets to land?
Well, we'll put the rig in before we lift the boat. So it's usually just some coordination with our crane driver and get the boat pointed into the wind and make sure everybody's ready on their tag lines. So the guys, when they were in Pensacola, they got it dialed in pretty well, and they're pretty good at it right now. No issues with it so far.
Yeah, I went out on some of the 72s in San Francisco, and it was amazing to watch, you know, the platform, you know, they call the holes on the catamaran. That you put the platform into the water, and it's basically pretty calm. And the second you hook up that sail, it's like a dog pulling on a leash. It wants to go. And I know the soft sails for the 75s, you can feather a little better than the hard sails. But, you know, do you have the same issue where you really got to – these things want to go when you hook them up?
Well, luckily, when we lift the mast into the boat, there's no sails on it yet. So the rig will be up with no sails, and it's – reasonably manageable at that point. I mean, obviously, if it's super windy, you're gonna need to be more careful than a day that's not so windy. But the chase boat will tow the boat out to go sailing, and then you'll put the mains up once mm-hmm. you're ready to sail. It's reasonably manageable up until that point, and then the guys can put their foot on the gas and go.
Where does the boat stay when it's not being raced? Is it staying on the water? Is it dissembled and assembled every day?
Yep. So after every sailing day, the boat gets lifted out of the water, the mast comes out of it, and the boat gets rolled into our boat shed. So that's every day after sailing. Every morning we go out, we'll roll it out and put the mast in, and then do the whole process in reverse at the end of the day.
In New Zealand, how's the weather? What's your enjoyment factor in doing this project?
Oh, I love it. I've been fortunate enough to spend quite a bit of time in New Zealand already. So it was, and that's where I have my family is from. I have a lot of family from here, so it was a bit of a homecoming for me. And as somebody who really hates the cold of New England winter, I'm not a big fan of the cold at all. So to get to go from summer there to summer here, straight back into summer there is pretty awesome. That's what I live for.
Is there a certain food that when you got back to New Zealand, you're like, yes, I can have this again?
Oh, yeah. Rat pies, meat pies.
Rat pies. Can't explain that one.
Oh, well, it's basically just a meat pie that you get from a questionable bakery. But it's a bit like the greasy pizza slice in the United States. It's, you know, it's not good, but you love it anyway.
But heat it up and take it, or is it more made on
basically
the
you go and you pull it out from under the heat lamp and you're good to go.
It's your comfort food, huh?
Yes. Oh, yeah, exactly. To the max.
Well, there we are. Rat pie. What do you think of that?
Yeah, it reminds me of in high school, I went to a boarding school, and every Sunday night we would have shepherd's pie. And every Sunday night it was completely different, and we figured out very quickly that shepherd's pie was ever left in the kitchen from that week went into this monstrosity called a shepherd's pie before they got reloaded by Cisco on Monday. So when I heard rat pie, I immediately flashed back to shepherd's pie in high school.
I was thinking of the Zanzibar pizza that I had when I was in Zanzibar for the first time, and Farouk Abdullah was taking me around, and he says, I wouldn't eat anything at all in this square except for the Zanzibar pizza. He says, this particular one is going to be safe. And it was actually really good. They made it right there on the spot. Anyway, I think we're going to be chatting a little bit in the second part of this this doing. How are you doing over there, Christopher, in the studio? I miss it, by the way. I really miss being able to come in.
Oh, I love it here. I got a bunch of AC-75s up on the monitors and looking at all the different ways the different syndicates have designed them, and looking forward to chatting about it.
Well, we're going to be back with Rick in the second half, and there's a little segue here with a little more of our interview with Trevor.
This is Karen Lyle and Christopher Kane of Salesport Talk, and we are continuing a conversation with Trevor Danielson. Trevor is one of the younger members of the New York Yacht Club American Magic Team. He is hoping to do his part on the production side to help the American Magic Team bring home the America's Cup trophy to the New York Yacht Club in March 2021. Let's listen into the conversation.
Getting any grief about being a Kiwi working with the American team?
No, definitely not. I mean, if you can hear my voice, I'm about as American as it gets, but I do have a Kiwi passport. So not too many people know about it, but it is there. But I'm an American through and through.
I mean, tell us a little bit about, you know, how you got here. I mean, what is your career path been? I know you've worked for Norse Sails and then worked with some racing boats. How did you arrive at the America's Cup?
Well, I was a college student at the University of Alabama, and I was studying political science. Exactly. Roll Tide. Tennessee this weekend. Looking forward to it. I kind of realized through a portion of my college career that I was just going to go sailing after college anyway. That's what I would do every summer. That's what I was interested in. I mean, I was studying political science, which I liked and was good at the time, but I knew it wasn't going to be my career. So I made the decision to leave school and just pursue a career in yachting. I had met a couple of the guys that worked for the team before. I'd worked for some of them on different projects, and I saw that there was a job opening for sort of a facilities kind of support role in Bristol. And I put my name forward, and I basically had to do a couple little side jobs for a couple of the guys on the way. And eventually they brought me on, and it's been definitely been a great experience so far.
What do you think is an important quality that you have that helps you work well on the team?
Ability to do everything, and ability to do everything twice is probably a good thing as well.
But when I campaign monohulls, you know, there's the jobs you like and the jobs you don't like. You know, hauling the boat out and cleaning the bottom before the beginning of every season was gruesome. Are there certain jobs or roles on the team where you're like, oh God, I guess we just got to break down and do this thing? What is the one job nobody wants to do?
I don't know. Could be anything, honestly. It kind of depends on the person, I feel like. Yeah, I mean, there's obviously some you like and some you don't like, but it's all better than working a desk job. So at the end of the day, you're working on an America's Cup boat, and that's what you tell yourself when you're cleaning up oily water or something of the sort. It's better than working a desk job.
I guess I'll ask the opposite question from my previous one. What's your favorite thing to work on the boat?
I like the rigging side of it. It's something that I've always been interested in. So any chance I get to jump into the rig team and doing rigging jobs, I'll always jump at those opportunities.
All
All right, welcome back to Sports Byline USA. Great to have you with us as we continue on Tuesday in the first hour with SalesportTalk.com with Karen Lyle and also Christopher Kane. This segment brought to you by Zanzibar Pizza. I would like to also, anyone who would want to get in on the Piano Finders, call line 1-800-878-PLAY as well. So let's start with you, Chris, when we talk, because you are our America's Cup guy, AC36. Where are we? About a month away. The clock is ticking, huh?
Yeah, we're coming up on their Christmas regatta, which will be the first time we see all four syndicates in the water at the same time. And then as Karen mentioned in the interview, March is when we kick this puppy off. And we have all three of the challenging syndicates are now in the water with their second-generation boats. And on Thursday, the Kiwis put in their second-generation boats. So we will have all four boats off the waters of New Zealand very soon. It's going to be interesting that the Kiwis gave themselves 4 weeks to get ready for the Christmas. So they've kind of already admitted they're probably going to be a little off the pace.
This is so exciting. I can't wait to see how these different designs perform and really who has the formula for the fastest boat.
Well, we're starting to see it already with the Challengers, and you know there was a lot of issues and concerns about the British boat. And if our listeners want to actually check out the photos of the boats that we have, they can go to SalesportTalk.com and click on the link for today's program. You will see an album of these new America's Cup boats. And the British one's very interesting, has a very pronounced skeg, a part that sticks out of the bottom of the hull. And all these boats are trying to figure out how do you get these boats out of the water fast? Because obviously there's a lot more on the foils right now, a lot more wetted surface, a lot more. The foils are just bigger this year than they were for the America's Cup boats in San Francisco. So it takes a while to drive those new foils into the water, get lift, pull them up out of the water. So anything that can get that hull out of the water faster and get these boats up to speed faster is going to be a huge advantage out on the race course. So you're seeing right now very, very different ideas about how to get these boats airborne faster. And the one thing I will say is the second-generation boats do seem to be more stable. We're seeing less crashes, tipping over, aerating of the rudders, which makes the boat kind of come way out of the water, almost like a beached whale breaching out of the water. You're seeing a lot less of that with the Gen 2. So they're starting to get these boats under control, but that's not the same as getting them to top speed. So it's going to be interesting over the next couple of weeks watching the boats figure out, you know, how high out of the water do they want to ride them? Do they want them lower in the water for an end cap effect? How quickly are they coming out and how long are they staying on the foil? So this is where we're really going to start figuring out the boats.
Well, there's a real difference between... Oh, go ahead, Rick.
Go ahead, Karen.
There's a real difference between the generation previous boat for the Great Britain team, Ineos, to the one they have now. I think they have, it looks like almost like a little keel or, you know, something that goes through the center of the boat that they didn't have before. Reminds me a little of those clipper ships. What do you think about that, Christopher?
Yeah, it kind of looks like a porterstone notch, which is what they used on the flying boats to get them out of the water faster. And I know you and I have definitely had a suspicion that's what it is. The original flying boats had trouble getting out of the water because they were so heavy and they were underpowered. And they figured out that if you stuck a little notch at the back of the hull, you could get that out of the water faster. It would break the surface tension faster and get it out of the water faster and with more control. And we've always had a suspicion that that's a Felixstowe notch is what is the British are up to with theirs. But all of them, to a varying degree, have that little bit of a notch at the back of their keels. In the back of their hulls, and everyone is just trying to figure out how do you fight these boats through one fluid water and get it quickly into another fluid air and make that happen efficiently and still maintain control. And that's the challenge on these boats right now.
Rick Tittle with Karen Lyle and Christopher Kane. A couple more questions here about the America's Cup on SalesportTalk.com segment. Christopher, speaking of American magic, I was reading this article about their instrumentation engineer Elvira Yabres. She manages the team's data flow
off the water. But on race days or practicing, she's in the four-engine support boat alongside. And then in real time, looking at all the instruments and the things that need to be calibrated and checked. And I just wondered, I mean, it's such a high-tech sport, you forget that it's not just the people who are racing as well. So kind of like a pit boss to a race car driver, what are some of the things that she would be telling the skipper of a boat like that?
Well, she won't really be telling the skipper anything as much as she's going to be asking for them to do different things at different points so she can get different data points. So there may be certain angles of the wind where she wants to get data points, and she'll ask them to drop down or tighten up to get a different angle of the wind. She will ask them to change the rake back and forth on the rudder and see what differences that makes in the data. So she's looking at more as, how can I get a whole 360-degree data set around this boat that fills in all the wind conditions, all the wind angles? We're already starting to see some pretty different wind conditions, some very choppy and different water conditions based on which course. There are currently, I believe, four courses they have set up at different places along the bay. And those all have different tides. The wind comes in from different directions. The chop and the sea state is slightly different. So she's going to be asking him to basically give her every possible parameter she needs to then set up what are called globals, which are then the numbers that during the actual race, the skipper will be looking to hit those numbers. He understands that this angle and this number is the optimum way to race the boat. Now, I will point out, the computers aren't always right. And we saw this in San Francisco with the Oracle boat, where they were sailing, matching the globals they were supposed to be using on the Oracle boat. And the sailors kept coming off the water every race saying, there's more speed in the boat. There's more speed in the boat. We're not driving it correctly. And they actually went against some of the numbers and found more speed that they didn't find before. And that's why, if you remember during the America's Cup in San Francisco, the Americans were really way behind the New Zealand syndicate and then caught up. And people were like, where did Oracle find all this extra speed? And there was claims of cheating. But it was the sailors who said, we don't think the computers are actually right. And that's always the interesting balance between what the numbers see and what the sailors, these very smart, very well-versed sailors, are feeling in the boat when they're out on the water. And that's always a challenge as well.
Aaron?
It seems to me that that sense of feel is so important. I know that you become acquainted with the boat. You can hear the pitch, pitch is a musical pitch of how the rig is performing. You can feel the water underneath you, and there's just like a certain place where you know, ha, I'm right there in the slot. It's right where it needs to be.
Right.
And those tolerances, I don't think they can really replace what a human being who has a lot of human experience can feel, but it is so complex. You need to have all of those maps, those global maps that tell what's possible, so you can think about it. But it really is improvisation in the moment, don't you think?
It is. And sorry, I meant polars, not globals. But especially when it's a brand new type of boat, right? So you're going to see the sailors initially kind of leaning on the numbers a little bit as they are getting to learn these boats. But you're right, Karen. At a certain point, they're going to learn what it feels like when one of these boats is in the zone, when it's locked in, when it's perfectly balanced. And they'll learn that. And as these things progress, you're probably going to see a similar dynamic as they start moving off the polars and saying, I know the numbers say this, but I'm feeling like the boat wants to do this and it feels better in the water. We're finding more efficiency. But again, it's a brand new boat. No one has ever, two of these boats have never lined up in battle against each other, and they won't until next month. And for now, the sailors are going to lean on the numbers probably more than they normally would in a class or a type of boat that they're already familiar with.
One more question for you, Chris. And ever since the movie Breaking Away, I kind of think like the Italians are always going to be cheating, which is totally racist. But with the Luna Rossa, and I see like the winged foils coming off the side, I don't know. What do you think about that boat?
I've had questions about these boats from the get-go. And Kara and I have done previous shows where I think there's a lot of foils. And I remember in the America's Cup boats in San Francisco, the foils came down and they went underneath the boat. And on these, they go down and then go both. There's two foils, one projecting out, one projecting in. So you have these things sticking out. And two boats close to each other, you could see those getting tangled up. And then the second problem is the America's Cup boats in San Francisco, the foil was pulled up into the hull. With these, they rotate out and are sticking out the side of the boat. And I have questions about, you know, again, we've never seen two of these boats actually line up in anger. And I think we're going to get some foils hitting each other. I don't.
Reminds me of that chariot scene in Ben-Hur, you know, with the little spikes from the wheel. Right?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, you know, you always have a sense when you're starting, when you're racing against each other, and it's a boat you're familiar with. You kind of just, it's like a quarterback, Rick, who sort of knows when that rusher is coming. He doesn't even need to see him. He just can feel it. And you can feel how close you are to another boat, and if you're too close, the sailors are going to have to relearn that. And so that's going to be – that's always been a concern for me. But we'll see what happens. We're weeks away.
We just have about 90 seconds here, but I know like in stock car racing, you can have so many different things that are just a millimeter off, and then yep. You are in violation. I just was wondering, like, is there someone that's going to come out and measure everything, or is it sort of like a major league ballpark? They each have their own dimensions.
Yeah, the boats are under what's called a box rule. And what that means is there are certain parts of a boat that are inside the box that you can't change. And then there's certain things in the rigs, for instance, where you do as a team have the option of kind of going off on your own and figuring out new things. As you can see, the foils themselves are standardized. The hulls are wildly different. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, who's right and who's wrong on that. But yeah, they do have measurements, and there have been boats in the past that have been penalized or told to change. The San Francisco boat back in 87 had a lot of trouble because it was a very radical design that they didn't know what to do with. And of course, the 83 Australian boat that first won the America's Cup away from the U.S., there was ruling issues because that was the first winged keel, and they weren't quite sure how that fit in the rules. So you're always going to see people pushing the envelope, like you heard in our interview.
That's Christopher Kane, and of course, as always, my co-host for SailSportTalk.com, Karen Lyle. Chris, Karen, thanks so much for everything, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, Rick.
We'll see you, Rick.
All right, thank you. And we'll take a quick break, and we'll come on back on Sports Byline Open Lines, 1-800-878-PLAY.